All right, picture this. You've got this land, right? Been in the family forever, passed down like generations. You pay taxes on it, you think it's yours, free and clear. Then bam, the state comes knocking.
Oh, that's never good.
Nope, not good at all. They're basically saying, sorry, but this land, it actually belongs to, well, everyone, like the whole state. Crazy, huh? It's like something ripped straight out of a history book, right? But guess what? This actually happened.
No way. Seriously.
Seriously. And that's exactly what we're diving into today. The case is Phillips Petroleum versus Mississippi.
Phillips Petroleum. I think I've heard of that one.
Yeah. You said over some really interesting stuff on this whole thing. So we're going to break it down and really get into it. Basically, it's private oil companies like Phillips Petroleum going head to head against the state of Mississippi.
Oil companies versus the state. That's got to be a big one.
Huge. And it's all about who gets to call the shots when it comes to land that's affected by tides.
Okay, so we're not just talking about any old land here. This is coastal stuff, right? Where the land meets the water.
Exactly. That kind of blurry zone. Lots of legal twists and turns there.
I bet. I mean, that's where you get into things like what, the public trust doctrine and all that.
Exactly. Public trust doctrine, equal footing doctrine. It all gets pretty messy. But let's start with the basics. We're talking about 42 acres in Mississippi.
42 acres. That's a decent chunk of land.
Right. Not tiny. And it's all underwater. Well, not totally underwater. It's underneath these tidal streams and bayous.
So, like marshy areas?
Yeah, kind of like that. But here's the thing. Phillips Petroleum, they had titles to this land. And these titles, some of them went way, way back, like Spanish land grants.
Spanish land grants. Whoa, we're talking old school here.
Super old school. We're talking centuries of supposed ownership. But then Mississippi steps in and says, hold on, this land is ours. And their argument hinges on this big legal idea that goes back to the very beginning of the U.S.
Hang on, let me guess. The equal footing doctrine.
Bingo, you got it. It's this idea that when a state joins the United States, it comes in with the same rights and powers as the original 13 states.
Right. Equal footing. Like they're all on the same level playing field.
Exactly. And a key part of that is owning the land beneath navigable waters, like the seabed. Now, Mississippi joined the Union in 1817, and they're saying that because this land is affected by the tides, the ebb and flow, it's basically theirs from the get-go, part of that equal footing deal.
Interesting. So because the tide touches it, they're claiming it's automatically theirs. Makes sense in a way.
Yeah. But then things get even more complicated because Mississippi starts leasing these areas out for, the big moneymaker, oil and gas exploration.
Oh, that's where the oil companies come in.
Right. Phillips Petroleum and other companies who thought they owned the land are not too happy about this. So they file a lawsuit, a quiet title suit.
Trying to officially clear up who actually owns the land, right?
Exactly. And that lawsuit leads to a showdown at the Supreme Court.
Wow. So we've got this clash between old land grants, oil companies, the state of Mississippi, and a really foundational legal principle.
It's a recipe for a landmark decision, for sure. But before we get to what the Supreme Court decided, let's zoom in on the core question here, the heart of the debate. It's like this. Does a state automatically own a piece of land simply because it's touched by the tide, even if you can't actually, sail a boat on it?
Right, so we're not talking about major rivers or anything.
Nope. More like those smaller streams and bayous we mentioned before.
Okay, but they're still affected by the tides, so that's where things get tricky.
Exactly. The companies are saying, look, we've got these old titles, and these waterways aren't the kind you can navigate. Why should the state suddenly have a claim?
But Mississippi fires back, saying, hold up, the equal footing doctrine gives us rights to these lands. And they bring up another big legal idea. The public trust doctrine.
Ah, yes. The public trust doctrine. That's a big one. It is. Basically, it says that states have a responsibility to manage certain natural resources, like navigable waters, for the benefit of the public. Things like fishing or navigation.
So, even if the state technically owns those waters, they can't just do whatever they want with them. They're held in trust for the public good.
Right. And in this case, the big question was, does that public trust extend beyond just those big navigable waterways? Does it cover all land affected by tides, even if you can't, say, sail a huge cargo ship through it?
That's a big question, all right. So, what did the Supreme Court say? Whose side did they take?
Well, the majority opinion, written by Justice White, sided with Mississippi. They basically said, yep, the equal footing doctrine gives states ownership of all lands influenced by the tide. Full stop. And they leaned heavily on history to back this up. look way back to English common law.
English common law, as in like medieval times.
Yep, all the way back then. Back then, the crown, you know, the king or queen owned the title lands.
Makes sense. Strategic importance, controlling the coast, all that.
Right. And the court's argument was that when the U.S. formed, the original states inherited this idea. And then when new states joined the Union, they got the same deal thanks to, you know, equal footing.
Okay, so they're tracing this concept of state ownership of title lands back through centuries of legal tradition.
Exactly. And they pointed to a case from U.S. history that kind of solidified this whole thing, Martin v. Waddell. It's from 1842. And it really cemented the idea that states own the land underneath tidal waters.
So a pretty strong precedent there.
Yeah, a cornerstone of the argument. And the core reasoning, both in that old case and in Phillips Petroleum, was that tidal lands, they serve important public interests.
Public interests? Like what?
Well, things like fishing, recreation.
Yeah.
Stuff that everyone should have access to. And even if a specific tidal stream isn't like a superhighway for ships, the fact that it's connected to the larger tidal system and its ecological role, that puts it in the public realm, the court said.
Okay, so even if it's not a major shipping lane, if the tide comes in and out, it's a public resource.
Exactly. So the Supreme Court is saying it's not just about whether a boat can practically navigate those waters. It's about the ebb and flow of the tide. That's the marker for state ownership, they said.
Makes you think differently about what navigable really means.
It does. But hold on, there's another wrinkle here. Remember how Phillips Petroleum and the other companies, they had those old titles? And they'd been paying taxes on this land for, like, ever.
Yeah, that was a big part of their argument, right? If they're paying taxes, it must be theirs.
Right. So what did the court have to say about that? They basically acknowledged the tax payments, but said that under Mississippi law, those payments didn't erase the state's underlying ownership.
So kind of like, you might have been paying taxes, but it was never really yours to begin with.
Exactly. The state's right to those title lands, it came from the very moment Mississippi became a state. And they never gave up that right, so the taxes didn't change anything.
Wow. So the Supreme Court's saying if the tide touches it, Mississippi owns it, tax history or not. That's a pretty firm line.
It is. But not everyone on the court agreed. We had a dissenting opinion, and it came from a big name, Justice O'Connor.
Justice O'Connor. Oh, she's like a legal rock star.
Absolutely. And her dissent raised some serious concerns about majority's interpretation, especially when it came to, you know, the whole public trust doctrine thing.
What was her take on that?
She thought the majority was stretching it way too far. Applying it to those smaller, non-navigable tidal areas was a step too far for her. She thought the public trust doctrine should really only apply to truly navigable waters, the kind that boats could easily travel on.
So she's drawing a stricter line when it comes to public trust than the majority opinion.
Right. And her big worry was about private property rights. She thought this ruling could totally undermine them. Like, people and companies who had owned and used this land for, like, centuries, suddenly they could lose it.
Just because of how the tide flows, that seems a bit unfair.
Yeah, that's kind of what Justice O'Connor was getting at. And she had this one line in her dissent that really hits home. She said, thousands of blameless owners could be dispossessed.
Ooh, yeah. That's a powerful statement.
It really is. It makes you think about the human cost of this legal decision, right?
Yeah.
Real people potentially losing what they thought was rightfully theirs. And Justice O'Connor argued that the majority opinion, the way they were leaning on English common law and going beyond navigability, it didn't have enough support in U.S. legal history. And she thought it could make property law super unstable.
Wow. So it wasn't just about abstract legal ideas. There were some very real-world implications on the line.
Absolutely. So let's step back for a moment and think about why this case matters, especially for our listeners who are into law. What are the big takeaways here?
Well, this case is huge when you think about managing coastal resources, especially with climate change and all that. It reinforces the idea that the public trust doctrine is a big check on private ownership, especially in ecologically important areas. Those tidal wetlands, those bayous, they're crucial for the environment. And this ruling gives states more power to manage those areas for the benefit of the public.
Which could affect a lot of things, right?
Tons of things. Oil and gas leasing, environmental regulations, how future land disputes along the coast get settled. It's all tied together. And for law students in particular, Phillips Petroleum v. Mississippi is a must-know case.
Why is that?
Because it shows you how the equal footing doctrine and the public trust doctrine work together and sometimes clash. And it highlights that for tidal lands, the key factor for state ownership is whether the tide affects it, not whether it's traditionally navigable.
So navigability, in the classic sense, isn't the be-all and end-all anymore?
Nope. The tides have taken center stage.
Interesting. So if we had to boil down our entire deep dive into Phillips Petroleum v. Mississippi to one single takeaway, the most important point for our listeners to remember, what would it be?
I'd say it's this. When it comes to land that's touched by the tides, state ownership is based on that tidal influence, not necessarily on whether you can, like, sail a boat on it. This case significantly expanded the potential reach of state control over coastal areas, really highlighting the power of state sovereignty rooted in the equal footing doctrine.
And I think that sets us up perfectly for a final thought to leave our listeners with, something to really chew on. What do you think?
I've got one.
Let's hear it.
All right, so think about this. In coastal areas, what happens when we prioritize state sovereignty based on this idea of tidal influence over private property rights that have been established, you know, sometimes for generations? What are the long-term effects, especially with the environmental challenges we're facing, climate change, the need to manage resources wisely, the fact that our coastlines are incredibly vulnerable? It's a question that goes way beyond this one case and forces us to really think about our relationship with those coastal areas.
That's a great point to end on, something for everyone to ponder. Thanks for joining me for this deep dive. It's been a fascinating one.